down.
Welcome, confidants, to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast. Oh, I drank too much coffee. Where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. And I am so freaking hyped to give this week's guest a platform other than TikTok, because he is one of my favorite TikTok creators. He's got a book out where it's called You've Already Won, A Journey Through Education and Nursing and Mental Health Awareness. He's got an archived podcast where you can all understand how to be a DNP, which is a doctor nurse practitioner. He works at Visions Teen, which is a mental health treatment center for youth mental health. And like I said, one of my favorite TikTokers. Welcome, Kojo.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Now, we've been talking for a minute, and right. I'm already trying to guess your astrological sign.
Okay.
But you're much more chill in person than you are on your TikTok. So I'm trying to decipher like what actually your sign is.
Can you give it a guess?
I don't want to be like way, way wrong, but I'm going to guess Cancer.
Sagittarius.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I was way off.
I don't know if that's closer or way off or what.
So when's your birthday? Sooner than later?
November 23rd.
Oh, it just passed. Wow. Right. I'm way off. Ignore all of that. But we were also laughing because we've had to reschedule this podcast twice.
Right.
Once because of you and once because of me. And I didn't tell you the reason why I had to cancel the first time. I said I had like an accident.
Right.
Well, the accident was me being on the phone and then I was trying to sit on a yoga ball on a concrete floor. And as soon as I sat, the yoga ball like popped out from underneath me and I just went straight flat back onto a concrete floor. Mm-hmm. And I was on a phone call and I literally went like all of the breath.
That's a freak accident.
And I could not fucking move. And I have had like a pain flare for like 2 weeks now because of it. I'm just the most dramatic person you'll ever meet. But this podcast isn't about me. This podcast is all about you. Kojo, what the fuck is your story? Because you are a mental health TikTok creator, which is very far few in between. And even more so, you are a man who talks about mental health. Even deeper, you are a black man that talks about mental health. And when I saw you, I was just like, oh.
I appreciate that.
How the fuck did you get involved in this? And why the fuck do you care about mental health?
It's crazy because, you know, obviously you have to go back to, you know, me in high school, I wasn't a good student, so I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. My dad was like, you know what? You don't know what you want to do. You don't have a good GPA. Just try nursing school for a year or two. So I did it, and I did it with the intention to not fail. So I kept not failing. Before you know it, I graduated. And then I took a job in the ICU, and then I had student loans. So the opportunity came up for me to work at a psychiatric hospital.
Whoa.
And they would help me out with the loan. So I took that job, and you know, obviously the rest is history. I got into the psych ward. It was unlike anything I ever seen before. Like, it was so weird to walk into a psych ward and like to see patients. Like, I walked in there expecting to see people like fighting and like hearing voices, but I didn't. People were watching TV. People were minding their own business. Like, I was just waiting for the okie doke, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny because not a lot of people know it, but I tried to quit the job.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried because it was so weird and like, it's not. Like, you don't have a lot of, it's not reputable to work at a psych ward, right? Or to tell people that you do that. Yeah, so I try to quit the job. Yeah, you know, like, well, at least, let's say, within nursing, you know, or even within psychiatry, like, people want to work in prestigious, like, hospitals, but, like, to work in a psych ward is not, like, the place that everybody wants to go to. So I tried to quit the job initially, and there was a hospital that, it was an ICU hospital down the street that was paying more and they had a sign-on bonus. So what I did was I was working two full-time jobs at the same time, but I was planning to quit the job at the psych hospital, right? So I didn't want to quit, so I wanted them to fire me. So I kept showing up late to work, but they were so sure that they wouldn't fire me. And it just so
You're
happened
trying
that,
to get that employee, that unemployment.
Right. And it just so happened that the other job, once the other job, like, the orientation, because I like talking to people. So the orientation part of the other job was fine. We're just talking, you know, we're just shooting the shit. Everything felt so good. But then when I had to get on the floor and like, you have to actually move patients and like give shots, I'm like, whoa, I can't do this type of work anymore. You know, so I waited 2 more days until I could get the sign-on bonus. I cashed it in. And I resigned from that hospital and I stayed at the psych hospital.
You took that money.
And they actually put me on the do not rehire list at the hospital.
What?
Yeah, because I just came, I got the money and I dipped out.
Damn, but you know what? Fuck the system.
Right.
Take that bag, because there is too many of us that have been fucked over by that mental health system. It's beautiful. Right. Move.
So I ended up staying at the psych hospital, and it was the best move I've ever made, because if I hadn't stayed, I wouldn't have learned more about mental health, and like, I wouldn't have become the person that I am today. But as I stayed, I began to see how the patients were so similar to us. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I want to kind of do this for a living. So I started to, you know, learn more and more. And then I started to talk about it online. And then things kind of went from there, you know. And I tell people all the time that initially I got on Instagram, let's say 2011, 2010, whenever it came out, because people were taking pictures of themselves, right? And like, you would get on there to like talk to the girls or like to look at girls.
Yeah, right.
And then I started to see that women were using the platform to sell things. Like, we were focused on the women. They were selling hair
products. Focusing on becoming entrepreneurs.
Right. They were selling all kinds of things. And I'm like, you know what? This doesn't make sense. I'm out here trying to look at you, but you're using this platform for like the greater good. Yeah. And I realized that you could use social media or Instagram for like something bigger than yourself. So I started to put out my story, and then people were gravitating to what I was talking about. And then over time, like TikTok eventually came out, and then I just kept doing the same thing, and it just kind of took off from there.
Well, I applaud you for, you know, keeping up with the like social impact, because I think that that's really the only way that we've been able to make a big shift in mental health and like breaking stigmas, because we're not seeing it on TV. We're not seeing it in the media, like the, you know, traditional media. We're not reading about it in the newspaper, and all of the, you know, books and psychiatry shit still sounds so clinical and is still so like such a privileged system that I really think it's because of social media that our generation has been able to say like, hey, we're the ones suffering. Why don't we have like a say in any of this? Right. And that's like, you know, why I wrote my book. I don't know where it is. I have like 1,000 copies. I'm definitely going to send you one. But my first book was called Don't Fucking Panic. And it, you know, I don't go into it too much just because it didn't feel like it was, it was more for my dependency on Klonopin through panic attacks. But I did go to an inpatient treatment center, and I also did an intensive outpatient treatment center. And those people who worked in there were my favorite fucking people. Like all the doctors and like people that were prescribing shit. I was like, you guys are just another cog in the system, in the wheel. But there's something about you guys that work there, because I had no idea it was, kind of like looked down upon in the industry, if you will. But I think it like arguably y'all's job is one of the most important.
I agree.
In it's, someone it's getting better.
It's definitely up there. And now we're in the middle of a pandemic, and now the focus is on mental health, but it should have always been that way. But we had to wait for this to happen before people could understand that it's important to take care of your mental health. You know, so I feel like I'm, you know, fortunate to have worked in such an environment, and, you know, like you get to keep it real, and the system is somewhat outdated as well. Like I remember having a patient who, when I was in school, I was riding with the psychiatrist, you know, he's teaching me all these different things. And he looked at a patient, it was a young black guy, maybe 19 or 20. And then, the patient was talking or dancing or whatever, and then like in his notes he's like, okay, psychotic, boom boom boom, we'll give him this, this, that. But then I'm like, hold up, I'm like, he's rapping the Young Thug song, I know that song. You know, but he was rapping like, and I'm like, I know that song. But like, and the psychiatrist, I mean, he's Indian, of course, like a different culture, he doesn't understand that. Like he's just rapping his favorite song, but like the words look disorganized. It looks like maybe he's schizophrenic. So we have to change the way that we approach mental health, because if you think about it, you know, the DSM and everything that we base our belief system on, it might be outdated, because if minorities never sought mental health care, then it's not based, it's based off of what we've seen. So there's a lot that we have to change up in the game.
Kojo, you just gave me My hairs are standing on end. Like what you just said, I've never been able to articulate, but everything about mental health has been centered around white men
right.
who come up with it and then catered to white people. Like right. what you just said, we will never be able to change it if we're not giving access to actual exactly. like standard of care to minorities. That right. is, oh, exactly. Exactly the truth. And, you know, I've seen it myself in the system where, you know, they pick, I've literally seen a nurse give a bed to a white guy over a black man because she probably thought he could benefit more from it. Mm. You know, like this guy looked a little bit yeah. more for the wear, like he's kind of been through it. And the white guy, you know, had family with him that was like, we will pay whatever, whenever, like we just need yeah. a bed. And those beds are so crucial and yeah, and rare and very expensive. And it's heartbreaking to see. So can you talk a little bit about like how we can kind of start to break that stigma? Cause I have no fucking clue. Like, how do we change the system?
Well, we have to first start talking about it, you know, and that's why I make content about like being at a psych ward, because people think about it, you know, like straitjackets and being tied down, but it's not like that.
No.
And it's actually the fastest way to get help, you know, in my opinion, because if somebody's coming in and if, let's say they're suicidal, homicidal, they're extremely anxious, depressed, all of this stuff, like if they go to the ER and they get sent out, I think in California, it's 5150 here.
Yeah.
But we called it 1013 back in Georgia. Yeah. Or Virginia, it's TDO, temporary detention order. So once you get to a psych ward, that's the fastest way to get help. You know, because now, like, we see you every single day. We're able to give you medications. We know that we have to draw labs 4 days after this, blah, blah, blah. So it's actually the fastest way to get help. So if you think of it as, you know, like, crisis stabilization, this is for, you know, the short term. If it's done properly, you will get the help that you need, and then you can follow up on the outpatient side of things.
Right.
The issue is a lot of times, like certain facilities, like if it's state run, you might be on the waiting list to get in, or if it's a private institution, then it becomes the issue of the haves and have nots.
Absolutely. Right?
So if you have the money, great. If you don't have it, it's like you have to struggle, or, you know, so I've seen people lie and say that they're going to hurt themselves or somebody else to get in because like the waiting list is so long. So like if you don't want to wait 3, 4, 5 months to see a psychiatric provider, like you might, like people would say like, you know, I'm going to hurt myself, and then they get in the hospital, you know? So it's messed up how the system is. Like we have to have, first of all, we need more providers, and then we need more hospitals, and we need more money to be in these systems. And then preventive care is the best, you know? So you were talking about, you know, clomp, and a lot of times people get burnt out on my side of things. So once somebody comes in, and that was happening to me, I was getting a little burnt out. That's why I came to California to make the switch to social media, because I was seeing myself becoming the person that looks at a patient like, okay, I have 3 admissions and 2 discharges. And instead of it being a patient, it's like, okay, I have to do X, Y, and Z, get it done, get in and get out. You know, so it's easy to throw clomp in at somebody because it'll fix it. It'll fix the issue like right then and there.
Yep.
But then you're creating one problem on top of, you know, fixing a short-term problem. It's just, it's a mess.
It's a bad solution.
So the whole system is like, and well, like I said, even us as providers, we're also getting burnt out too. So it's like, who takes care of the person who takes care of other people?
Wow. That's a good question. How do you self-care? I mean, besides weed brownies.
By being as selfish as possible, I have to.
Ooh, I love that.
I have to do things that make sense for me, you know. So, setting boundaries, like sometimes telling my parents that I don't feel like doing this, or I don't want to do this, or like doing a certain thing. Like now, I'm real with myself. Like I would, like I told my little brother, I said, you know what, I don't give money out anymore. Because when I first started to make it, like I was just. Like I had all my friends like, oh, yo, I got you. And then in our culture, you know, coming from West Africa, it's like you want to do for your parents to put them on. So I told a story once I came home, I gave my parents $400 each. And then it started a system of, I felt like to be a good son, I had to give them money. So I got to the point where I said, you know what, giving out money lowers my self-esteem.
Wow.
So I had to stop doing that. And once I pull back, I don't have issues with family, with friends, with literally with everything. So like if something doesn't make sense to me, I'm not going to do it. And with self-care, I have to be as selfish as possible.
You know? I
so
love
the,
that.
The things that I enjoy doing, those are non-negotiable. So if I like to go electric bike riding, or if I want to go play basketball or video games, like I'm not going to budge for anything or anybody, because that's what like makes me, you know?
I call myself selfish all the fucking time. And I think we have to kind of like take away the negative connotation that comes with it, because you are a giver. You're giving, you're giving, you're giving. People are taking all week.
Exactly.
And like, thank God for people like you that have that capability. And no one, you know, setting boundaries, I think, is such a beautiful thing. And the only people that disrespect boundaries are people that don't respect you. And so the fact that you're able to like tell that story.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
I'm so glad everything worked out for the best. I want to go back a little bit to where you said something about changing the system, and you said preventative care is like crucial.
Right.
And it made me think, like, you know, not only myself, like I've dealt with panic disorder and anxiety and depression and mood disorder. And I was like misdiagnosed bipolar. And like, you know, I've had all these ups and downs with my mental health. And then someone very close to me experiences hypomania and psychosis. And so I thought I had seen like the craziest, I hate the word crazy, but I also love it. Like I thought I've seen the most like crazy part of mental health. And then I saw what like a hypomanic, like bipolar episode can really look like. And I was like, oh shit, it shouldn't have gotten this bad. Like it should not have gotten to this point.
Right.
It like, there should have been so many steps that were covered before getting to this hospitalization point. And I think it goes back to that same shit of like, we don't have enough providers. We don't have enough accessibility, and it cost. Why does it cost so much money to get your mind right?
It's crazy. You know, I mean, some private hospitals, it might cost like $1,500 or more a day for a bed.
What
you
the
know?
Fuck?
Right. So I mean, to be honest, like I see why people will like heroin is cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest, like, heroin is cheaper, so I see why people self-medicate things like, you know, like that, because it'll cost you this much to get to fix your problem for today, and it'll cost you so much to actually get right, you know. So can you blame people when the help isn't, you know, in place? You know, so it's about empathy. Like, you have to see why people are doing what they're doing. And in terms of preventative care, certain people can't do certain things, right? So if you have, like, if alcoholism runs in your family, then like, you have to be careful. You know, if you have an addictive personality, you have to be careful. If schizophrenia is deep in your family, you have to be very careful with marijuana, because it can trigger psychosis. Whereas the next person, Wiz Khalifa, can smoke it and become a Grammy, you know, winning artist, but maybe it's not in his family. So if you're bipolar, you have to be careful with stress. Make sure that you're not under too much stress. Make sure that you're getting enough sleep. Maybe you can't hang out all night like your friends, because it might trigger a manic episode. So we all have to be aware and figure out what self-care is for us, because self-care is different for each person. And at different points throughout the year, self-care is going to look different for you.
Wow. I mean, you bring up a good point. Like, no part what time of year it is, like, it's never going to be one way all the time. Like, you don't get happy and it's like, well, I figured it out. I'm done. Right. I'm just this way now. It's like, life is supposed to be a roller coaster. Like, things are supposed to happen in life, good things, bad things.
Right.
I want to hone in a little bit on talking about like men in mental health, because what I'm seeing a lot, not only, you know, in my personal mental health circles, but also what's been brought out to light in the media, especially like since George Floyd, is that we're seeing a lot of men get to these points of, not saying George Floyd, but others, you know, now that we have cell phones and it being public, go into these kind of psychotic episodes. And there's a big fucking difference between being hypomanic and being in psychosis. And I think people don't know when we're like teetering the line, and if you can catch it early, if you can catch them in that ramped up state, is what I call it, like, you can completely avoid the psychosis. But usually you don't know with men that they're truly bipolar until they have a psychotic episode.
Right. And
unfortunately, what we're seeing in the media, especially with black men, is that they're asking for help. We're calling crisis lines and cops are being sent and people are being killed. Right. And, you know, we talk about preventing. And I think with men, there's this idea of like, you can't talk about feelings without being perceived as weak in your culture. You can't cry. You can't show emotion. So like, talk to me about being a guy who is so willing to kind of break that.
Right. So it comes from my professional experience and also my personal experience. So on the professional side of things, obviously, you know, as a minority or as a black man, if I go into a hospital and let's say I'm amped up and a white guy goes into a hospital, I'm more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, you know, because like you're perceived to be more aggressive, you know.
Wow.
So if we're talking about psychosis, right, within the context of schizophrenia, like delusions, hallucinations, disorganized thinking, you know, paranoia, we have to separate that from like a rational fear. So if you're a black guy and you're afraid of the cops pulling you over, I will call that a rational fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but somebody else might think that it's paranoia. And also in terms of like mania, you know, like you would see or hypomania, like for 4 days or so, like you'd see somebody not get enough sleep, you know, somebody have an elevated mood, do things that are outside of what you would normally do. So, you know, if you're somebody who you spend money, you know, a lot, but then now you're maxing out every credit card you have, you start to get concerned. So you have to, first of all, it's really tough to lock in on a diagnosis of bipolar. Like sometimes people wait like a decade to get an accurate diagnosis. And sometimes people are misdiagnosed. Yeah. It can look like ADHD. It can look like anxiety. Mm. So a lot of times we don't even know until we get a comprehensive like evaluation in, and we have to, you know, get collateral information from the family members, spouse, and all this different stuff. So the most important thing I would say is to go get the help, you know? And for me, I'm open because like throughout my life, like I've seen like working in the psych hospitals, like I had a guy who he was admitted and he was wanting to fight all the staff and he was throwing chairs. And I think a year before he had lost his child, you know.
Confidant, sober girlies, are you looking to cut back or cut out alcohol this year? Come on, join me and Zach on our sober journeys. Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails are the perfect alcohol replacement. We've recreated the cocktails you know and love, like a lime margarita and a grapefruit paloma, so you can enjoy the flavors and feelings of those cocktails without the booze. That's right, zero proof, zero compromise. Listeners can get 15% off the Recess mocktail sampler at takearecess.com/Kelsey. Each can is lightly sparkling mocktail infused with functional ingredients like so many stress balancing adaptogens made with real fruit and only 25 calories or less. It's a guilt-free way to unwind. Whether you're relaxing after work or hanging out with friends, make Recess mocktails your drink between drinks or, like me, your forever mocktail. I am so obsessed with the ginger lime mule and also the grapefruit paloma for spring. It's my favorite go-to weekend drink. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at takearecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences.
In an accident. So he never saw anybody. He never spoke to anybody about anything. And it built up all this frustration to the point where, like, you never got the chance to grieve. So now it's a year later and you're still stuck at denial, you know? Wow. So we have to talk about what is making us frustrated, you know? Yeah. So, like, even me personally, like, I wouldn't speak up in, you know, relationships or things like that. Or, like, I used to, honestly, like, I would see people, like, cheat. And I thought, okay, I can do this because, like, you know, like, I'm successful on the outside. So nobody cares as long as I don't get caught.
Wow.
So I thought that if you don't get caught, you're the same as the person who never does it.
Wow.
You know, so, like, I was I was living my own type of lifestyle. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, maybe ex-girlfriends watching it are like, this guy is your mental health advocate.
But, no, you're fucking human.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, when you have no desire to be, you know, a different version of yourself, then you can be authentic and you can help other people because everybody's trying to put on for social media or put on for friends. But we all make these mistakes. So you have to be transparent with yourself and you have to figure out there's a reason why you're doing what you're doing. So like what's going on? Like for me, my parents didn't give me, coming from like the African background, we didn't get the chance to make decisions coming up. So when I was an adult, it was hard to make a decision.
Wow.
So at one point it was difficult for me to say no to like a girlfriend because I'm used to like the people pleasing thing.
Yeah.
So it's all about connecting the dots. So once I figured that out, I'm like, okay, no, I have to have boundaries with this. I don't like doing this, so I'm not going to do this. And like everything goes to like communication and respect. And even like with guys, I tell them, don't even worry about sex, worry about respect. Cause you might even get, you might get the girl you want, the hot girl you want. But after the chase, like you might feel like you might not feel good. People have to feel good about themselves. So respect and boundaries is the most important thing, you know. And if somebody doesn't validate how you feel, then like we talk about breaking the stigma, but like I want to break the stigma and I want people to talk about mental health awareness and the importance of it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you my story and tell you where I know professionally and personally.
Right.
And then after that, I'm going to move on. I'm not going to wait for you to understand what's going on. Because you're going to be frustrated. So I'm just going to put it out there.
Yep.
Everything, you know, the real raw shit. And then let people either gravitate towards it or people can keep living their life, which, you know, they've composed it to be something which is a fake lifestyle. You know?
Right.
Or you can be real with yourself. And the sooner you're real with yourself, you can get to loving who you are. Because it's hard to love like a fake version of yourself.
You know? Yeah. That version of yourself usually sucks. I think it's Brene Brown who says like, is it Brene Brown? I can't remember, but it's like, I want to change my life without actually changing anything about my life.
Right.
And it's like, well, if you're able to kind of take an inventory, and I think unfortunately that's why we usually see this kind of shit, like, you know, mental breakdowns and things happen in people's lives in their later 20s because your teen years are filled with so much fucking drama anyway.
Right.
Like you're building who you are. Your hormones are fucking nuts. Like that's why I find what you do in like wanting to work with teens. Like I think all teens are cunts. All teens are assholes. Like me included. I was a big.
It's normal, you know?
Yeah. But like now you're in a even more heightened state of mental like, snapsies firing off.
Right.
So tell me about your decision to go work with teens and maybe how that's different from adults.
So it's actually funny because it's a great story. I was on TikTok Live and then the owner of Visions, she reached out and she's like, hey, we have this great center. You can work with teens. It can be part-time. I know social media is your full-time, so you don't have to burn yourself out like you were doing in Virginia. So I replied back to her on December 4th because she sent me the screenshot. And I was like, oh, Amanda, thank you so much. I'll bookmark this for future, whatever. And she's like, oh, you can't bookmark me. So she kept being like, she stayed on it. And, you know, then I was back and forth. They got me out here. I was out in Thousand Oaks looking at the center. And the way that they were operating their business, I liked it. And then getting to talk with the teens, like I saw that, okay, I can make a difference here. And if you catch a teenager at the right point in their life, you can, it's easier to, you know, help out a kid than to have to, like, fix an adult, you know? By the time you're 25, 30, 35, you have all these toxic tendencies that you've picked up and it's become your way of life and it's embedded into your identity. So it's hard to like, to break that, you have to change who you are at the core. So
and that's
why not,
easier,
why not catch them when they're 15, 16, you know? Yeah. And when, like, if you want to help somebody, like the kids will gravitate towards you and like, you have to have boundaries. Like if they don't want the help, then hey, like you have to want the help for me to help you out. You know, so I figured out, you know what, I'd love to work a day or two or three a week and then do social media. It fit into my plan, you know.
That's so perfect.
It's not something that I wouldn't have done if I didn't want to do it. So I'm excited to work with the kids.
Yeah, it does sound like a nice balance. I dropped out of three colleges. I told you I went to Auburn, then I moved to New York City, then moved to LA, and I've tried to do college in all of those cities. And I was just like, it's not for me. Just give me a camera and let me start making shit.
And you're good at that, you know?
Thank you. I try very hard, and it was never ever my fucking intention to get into the mental health space. You know, when I worked at BuzzFeed, that's really when I felt the safest I've ever felt to talk about it. Like you know, I felt, okay, I've got a paycheck. I've got good health insurance. Like, they're not going to fire me because I'm fucking fucked up. Like, if right. anything, this is just like my therapy. And the response was so incredible that, you know, it wasn't one of those things where then I felt obligated to do it. It was like a fucking weight off my shoulders. And, you know, the best messages I still get, you know, in my DMs, especially now that the book's out, is when people say, I thought I was the only person in the fucking world who thought this thought or did this thing or thought I was dealing with this thing. And to read about it is making me feel so different now. And I'm like, that is why I do it, is because I've been that teen in the inpatient center, like sneaking coke into the fucking bathroom and like, oh God, I was just Mickey, an asshole. Mickey,
wow.
I was not great. I was a problem, but I didn't.
It's part of your story.
Yeah. And I didn't want to change back then. Like I had to make, I really had to hit, you know, rock bottom, as they say.
Right.
And my rock bottom is still a pretty soft bottom considering like I didn't lose everything in my life.
Right.
Like I think again, it's like, catching those people, exactly what you're saying, like catching them before they have these instilled habits, because it's really hard to break a habit once you're like in your 30s. But I have to imagine they must think you're so cool, like you're a TikTok star.
Well, I haven't actually got to meet the majority of them, but when I went, I just like went in like regular clothes. I didn't go with the TikTok gear, but I guess once they find out, like that would be enough to get their attention.
Right.
You have to get, if you want to teach anybody something, you have to get their attention first.
Yeah.
So if I get their attention, then they'll say, oh, he communicates in our language. You know,
right.
The issue with all of mental health is people talk in all these big words and, you know, the general public can't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, so how can you make a difference when you can't communicate? Like you have to speak in their language, you know, like bring it down, make everything at like an eighth grade reading level. So that way you miss nobody.
Well, I think too, like you're doing such important work, right? Like, and doing the social media, were you nervous at all to kind of like put your shit out there to kind of be known as like the mental health guru, or were you already so comfortable with talking about that?
So it took me a while. Like I had to work up to it. And like, I feel like the way my life went, like everything led up to this point, you know? So going back to my book, You Already Won. And I wrote the book. I liked everything about the book. The one chapter that I was hesitant to talk about in the book was when I got diagnosed with ADHD in grad school. Because, you know, I was working, I was doing a little bit of social media. Like I had a clothing company promoting mental health awareness. I was, you know, working on the book a little bit. I was in grad school getting a DNP, and then I was also teaching at the university. So there was a rumor going around that I was doing cocaine. And I heard this from my sister, who was classmates with some of the students that I was teaching.
Whoops.
Like, oh, Jojo must be doing cocaine because he's doing like a million different things at once.
Yeah.
So obviously, like with the ADHD thing, I felt like people were going to attribute my success to, oh, he got diagnosed with ADHD. He had to take Adderall, all this other stuff.
Oh,
so
geez.
I thought about that for a second. And then I said, no, I have to be as authentic as possible.
Yeah.
And I put that part out in the book. And then, you know, with a book, it's in print, it's out there for life,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
So it's out there. And once I put that out there and I saw people like reacted to it, it gave me more confidence. And then after I graduated, I wanted to work back at the hospital where I was doing my rotations with, you know. And then the psychiatrist who trained me, like, he was like, hey, you want to come and work with us? And I was waiting to work with them, but they didn't have a spot. And my recruiter called me, and they had a job in Virginia, and I was 7-8 hours away from home. I knew nobody out there. I had nothing but free time. So when you're not around people that you came up with,
right,
you kind of become like a brand new person.
Yeah.
And
new
the thing
kid
about TikTok is like, on Instagram you have people that you knew from high school and people that go to your church and things like that. So they know you as a certain type of person.
Yeah.
So like you might feel like the weight of their judgment on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But on TikTok you can be a brand new person.
Yep.
Like, create an account and just put your story out there. So I created my account and I was out there in Virginia. I didn't know anybody. I had nothing but free time. So I was just putting my story out there, and I wasn't having to worry about going to work with the same people that I had been with. Like I went to a whole new environment, you know, and I didn't even tell my coworkers about my TikTok account. Like they would eventually they're like, oh, I saw you on TikTok. And then they're like, oh, let me hear about your book and things like that. But I just went about my business. And now I've like got all this confidence to the point where like you can say what you want to say about me. I don't really care. Like,
there you go.
At most, if I see like I'll block and like I'll go about my day.
But, yeah.
I care less and less every day about what somebody else thinks about me.
The block button is your best friend. Yeah, and is. I've been on the internet for over 10 years now, and every now and then, I don't read the comments because I don't feed the trolls. But every now and then I'll get a message where I'm just like, it brings me back to that like salty place where I'm like, oh wait, I've learned to turn that into like compassion for the other person, and I'll send them a nice message and then I block their ass, and what you said. But I think, you know, if anyone's listening, any confidants out there, you know, who are nervous about to kind of come forward with, you know, your diagnosis or talk about it with coworkers or family or friends, like take it from two people who literally were able to like make careers and connections and, you know, you said the same thing. It was like, it built your confidence. And I think that's one thing about mental illness or, you know, disorders or whatever you want to call it, especially when you're dealing with those more severe diagnoses, you know, the schizophrenia, the bipolar, it makes you feel so fucking insecure and not confident, because we still don't fucking know exactly how to treat it. You know, like we can go back and do trauma work and somatic, and we can, you know, medicate, and, you know, we're getting there. But I have to imagine it's also really scary, you know, at first for the people who still don't even kind of understand what their diagnosis is themselves.
It's very scary. And actually, a funny thing that happens is at the psych hospitals, there's like a hierarchy of mental illnesses. So like I've witnessed patients who, let's say they were in there for generalized anxiety, right? They would look at the person who's schizophrenic and say, oh, you're, that person's really crazy. Like I don't belong here.
Right. You know,
so like people would rather be anxious than schizophrenic. You'd rather bipolar than, cause like schizophrenia, like it just like
it's
the way it sounds,
the scariest,
you know, and you treat it with antipsychotics, which means like anti, am I psychotic, you know? So like the way you word things is important. I'll say, oh, this is a medication that's going to help, you know, allow your thoughts to be more organized, you know? But I mean, I'll give them the pamphlet, which will say, you know, how dollars that press an antipsychotic, but I don't want to put them into a box. Like, okay.
Yes.
Like with that label, because that can damage their self-esteem.
Yes. Oh my God. And like, I think you drew the line perfectly. It's like once you hit bipolar and schizophrenia, you become unhinged, unhirable, unfriendable. Like you become like, there is really this line where I think people are like, you're either certified crazy or just like crazy because you're anxious and depressed, and like everyone's anxious and depressed now. And it's like, there is this line in the sand that's like, oh, but you're not like not hireable and like interruptive of my daily life in a way that's going to cost a lot of money and care. And, you know, as society, you know, I wrote a little chapter in the book about like your rights as, you know, an employee, like your mental health rights that you can't be discriminated against because of health disorders. But I would assume it would be really scary for someone who is managing their symptoms to take like a full-time job that is dealing with people in public. And, you know, I hate to think that someone would have to alter their dreams in order to fit kind of like a diagnosis or a management.
Right. That's how things I imagine would have been in the past. You know, for example, like, let's just take schizophrenia, for example. If you're schizophrenic and you take your medication every day, first of all, it's hard to take the same thing every single day for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, medicine's evolving. We have long-acting injectables, and we're doing our best to try and figure things out on that end. But it's like you're taking meds every single day, and then, like, you have to, like, you don't want anybody to see, like, your pill bottle. You don't want people to know, like, what you're taking. And then, like, if you disclose it ahead of time, you'll know if they're going to not hire you because they're going to think that you're crazy, or they're going to think that you're aggressive, or if conflict arises in the workplace, they're going to feel like you're going to wild out.
Right.
When people have fights, everybody, like, has fights and disagreements. So it's like, it's almost like it's this big secret that you're holding in.
Yes.
And it's like you don't want anybody to know.
Yes.
And you, like, that's a lot of weight on your shoulders to live that way. Think about it. Like, you're living, like, you've constructed this person, this version of yourself that goes to work every day and gets a stable paycheck. And I can imagine it's hard for a lot of people. Like, if, mm-hmm. like, fortunately for me, I just have a pup. You know, I have kids. So, like, yeah. like I was able to,
oh,
like,
with kids. Oh, my God.
Right. I was able to, like, come out here to California. Like, I can live off a sixth of what I made last year because wow. I don't buy things. Like,
yeah.
like, there's nothing that I want right now that I can think of that, like, I need.
Yeah. Sure. You know,
but for somebody who has kids and, let's say, a wife and a family, like, why would you put your story out online
yep.
if it could take away from you putting food on the table? Like, that's right. a very real conversation.
100%.
If I was in that position, I'm a family-oriented person. I would not share my story if it would take away from my wife and kids eating.
Yeah, I don't blame those people at all.
That person's living in a mental prison, you yes. know, and it's tough because they have to, like, they want to be authentic, or they'll see me and you be, like, authentic on social media yeah. and they'll say, you know what? I want to be like them, but I can't because, like, my son has to eat, you know?
Right. And, like, I hope it happens in my lifetime that I get to see it because, you know.
I think it will, actually.
Yeah. Well, like, I, not to go, like, too off topic, but, like, look at Kanye. Look at fucking yeah. Elon Musk. Like, look at people that are in these very high positions of power that are brilliant, creative geniuses. I mean, mm-hmm. some, you know, bipolar people that I know are the most fucking intelligent, right. creative,
yeah.
wonderful fucking people. Like, we wouldn't have what we have in society without mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, unfortunately, we've seen the way that the media has treated Kanye. And I think it is, like, putting us forward and then right. setting us back, like, 10 fucking years because we have someone who's willing to talk about it publicly. And then anytime something happens, we're either going, like, oh, it's just his mania, or, like, oh, he's just mentally exactly. ill, or he's fucking crazy and fucked up and he's saying that shit on his own volition. And, like, I don't think the world has caught up to us that no. And, you know, I say this all the time is, like, I genuinely think the, you know, GAD brains, the bipolar, the schizophrenic, the, you know, spectrum, like, I really do think our brains are more advanced than society is willing to allow. And it sounds a little conspiracy theory that it's like, oh, the man's trying to keep us down. But I genuinely believe, like, we're going to evolve to a society where we're just like, oh yeah, that person has, like, whatever. Who cares?
Right. No, I can see that because you have to exert so much mental energy to do what you're doing. Your brain is moving so fast, mm-hmm. you know? So in terms of, like, breaking the stigma and making it acceptable to talk about, like, when I see the Kanye news and, you know, like, I've seen how it's like for families bringing people in who are bipolar, but they've had the, you know, opportunity to keep things private. Like, this has right. to be broadcasted, and, like, people will love, say, oh, she's getting divorced. But like, at the end of the day, that's somebody's actual life.
Yeah. There's
actual human beings involved. There's a marriage about to break up. There's right. kids involved.
Yeah. You know,
so, and also, like, I don't know if he struggles to accept his diagnosis, but, like, he's put out brilliant work, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, did I lose you for a second?
You're frozen. Okay. I think we're okay.
Okay. We're back.
Think we're back. If not, we'll figure it out. But this might actually be a fantastic place to wrap up anyway, because I could talk about this shit forever, but I know
I could too.
It's Monday. We should definitely stay connected 100%.
Sure.
But I want the audience to know, like, how they can, you know, not only find you, but find information on how to do what you do. Because, like I said, you have a podcast archived about becoming a psychiatric doctor, nurse practitioner. So
right.
give me a little bit of, like, how can people find you? And then also, how can people find out about, like, how to help the world be a better place?
Okay. So thank you for the opportunity, by the way.
Absolutely.
The best way to find me is obviously Instagram at Dr. Kojo Safo. And then TikTok is at Dr. Kojo Safo. My podcast on Apple Music or at Spotify is on all those networks, and that talks about my educational journey, and that's how you can do what I do professionally. And in terms of doing what I do, like, now with social media, I would say just follow my TikTok and then look at the content, and then you will, once you watch that, other people who do similar things will pop up on your For You page. And in terms of wanting information about mental health, an organization that I'm partnered up with, Mental Health America, they're the largest nonprofit that serves Americans with mental health issues. They're located in Washington, D.C. So if you go to my the link in my Instagram and my TikTok bio, you can get to the Mental Health America website there, and you can also take a free screening tool, screening assessment. It won't diagnose you, but it'll key you on the fact that you might be having symptoms of mania, anxiety, depression, and things like that. And it's completely free, and people don't know about that.
I didn't even know about that, because I don't partner with Mental Health America. I do NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. That's more for like...
I love NAMI research. As well.
Yeah, but I didn't know about that. That's great. That's like a quiz, very BuzzFeed, but for something that can help change your life. Kodro, thank you so much for doing this. I'm going to stay in touch with you for sure. Get you my book. Everyone, make sure to also go check out his book. And we will see you next week. Bye, confidants.
Thank you so much.